always like to hear Kent preach. He's got a very good way of presenting a very Christian and orthodox position in a direct and potentially unorthodox manner. But at the heart of the issue, it's reality and it's truth. And frankly, that unorthodox matter sometimes help us see the truth more clearly. So whether you succeed or fail, we love you, Kent. Come on up and give it a try.
Yeah, I really appreciate you saying you love me, because actually it's been a weird couple of weeks for me, and I usually don't get nervous. I get a little nervous before I come up, but today I'm like shaking almost. It's amazing. But you know, when I was sitting next to my granddaughter Rebecca, and her little, is it Anna? Her friend? What? Savannah. I couldn't hear because they're little squeaky voices, but and I'm half deaf. But her friend Savannah was here, and they're in class together, and they're in ballet together. And she was so excited, you know, and they just kept kind of looking at each other and laughing and smiling. I thought, I hope as old people, older people, that we remember to love each other that way and be so happy to see each other. And, you know, it's why else bother to come here? I mean, because we know that's how God sees us. He loves us and he's happy to see us here, and he's delighted in us. So that was a good blessing. And the reason it was especially good for me, I think the reason I've been nervous is I had a big zit right on the end of my nose. Is he still there? No. 65 years old, I'm going to this wedding. I'm not even in the wedding party, but I can feel this thing kind of starting to come out of my nose. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. And I thought, well, who cares? You know, some guy has a zit on his nose. Who even cares? But I cared, right? It's because if it's you, then you worry about it. And then on top of that, I went to the doctor, and he said it was probably a staph infection. So he gave me this mega doses of antibiotic. And then my guts started to do all kinds of stuff. And so then I'm thinking, oh, great. So it's only like 50 feet from here to the bathroom. But if I have to go running there, it's going to be really embarrassing, you know. Again, who cares, right? But for me, it's a big deal. So it's funny how we filter everything through our own, through us, right? But I'm really here for you, okay? I just wanted to get that out of the way to help me calm down a little bit. Now, what I want to talk to you about today is sacrificial giving. And that's the point at which everybody goes, ooh, you know, let's not talk about that. Well, I'm going to make it easy on you. I'll tell you that right up front, okay? Well, I'm going to explain to you that sacrificial giving is not something you need to worry about, not something you need to, like, work up your spiritual muscles over, okay? I mean, you do, but it's not something you got to force yourself to do necessarily. It's going to be a little simpler than you think and a lot harder than you think, okay? So there's going to be three stories that I'm going to talk from. Oh, I meant to give you, I'm just going to tell you that I don't like that thing where I keep saying the Bible verses over and over again. So if you got a pencil and you want to know where I'm reading from, it is Genesis 22, 1 through 18, Hebrews chapter 11, verses 17 and 19, 2 Samuel chapter 24, verses 14 to 25, 1 Chronicles chapter 21, verses 25 and 26, and Luke chapter 21, 1 through 4. And I only do that because I know some people like to take notes, and I'm not going to keep saying that stuff over. The last two is 1 Chronicles, say them all, Genesis 22, 1 through 18, Hebrews 11, 17 to 19, 2 Samuel chapter 24, verses 14 to 25, 1 Chronicles chapter 21, verses 25 to 26, and Luke chapter 21, verses 1 to 4. I meant to give this to Mike or somebody so they could put them up on the wall, but it's here if you forget later, if you want to see. That's just easier than going through that over and over again while I'm up here. The stories that are encompassed in those verses, there's about Abraham, who was the first guy chosen to be God's chosen people. He was asked at one point to sacrifice his own son, so I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about King David, who was the second king of the Jews 1,000 years later, who was instructed to buy a threshing floor and burn a sacrifice there. So Abraham was ordered by God or commanded by God to sacrifice his own son. David was ordered to buy a piece of property and burn sacrifices there. And then the last one is, did I say 4:3? Anyway, is about a widow that Jesus saw putting some money into the treasury in Jerusalem at the temple where all the Jews worshipped. She put in like these two little dinky coins, and he talked about how important that was. Sometimes we're called upon to make enormous sacrifices. And Abraham was, like I said, chosen by God to start the whole line of lineage that would become the Jewish people. And he was picked out of someplace up in Iraq, where we would now be Iraq. He was told to move down to what we would now call Israel in a couple stages. And he really didn't know why exactly, but he obeyed. And then he lived to be about 100 years old, almost, well, 90-something anyway, and he and his wife didn't have any kids. And especially in that culture, it was really a big deal to, if you didn't have kids, it's like, man, what's my life even worth? That's because they didn't have iPhones. So, you know, kids were really important then, but they didn't have computers, they didn't have TVs, they didn't have any of that stuff. So kids were actually important then. And God came to him and his wife and said, even though you're like 90-something years old, you're gonna have a kid. And then they wound up not, it's like a long time went by and they didn't have a kid and they made their own arrangements. And finally, when they were really old, they had this one son, and God, Isaac, and God told him, your whole lineage, all the Jews are going to come from that one son. So, I mean, imagine the importance. They waited 100 years. Second of all, they had to believe this promise that is just outlandish. You know, you're going to have a kid when you're 100 years old. And third, that this one kid is somehow going to become the father of a whole nation. And Abraham, in fact, would be the father of a whole nation. And I mean, if you had like 10 or 12 kids, you might have made more sense, right? But he just had one, Isaac. All right. And then God says to him, okay, I want you to take him up onto that mountain and lay a fire, get his fire ready, the wood ready, lay him on top of that, bind him up, kill him, and burn him, burn up his body. Which is the way they did sacrifices with sheep and lambs and cows and all kinds of stuff in those days. All right? Which was really weird for two reasons. One, God had been very clear all along with everybody that worshipped him, never, ever offer up your children to me as a sacrifice. And now he says, go do it. And the second reason is weird is he just made this promise to Abraham that his son would be the father of this whole people. So if he kills him, and he's about a teenager, you can tell he's around a teenager because when they go to the mountain to do the sacrifice, Abraham makes him carry the wood that they're going to use to burn him up. Really, kind of, I guess he was a kid. He was in better shape, you know. He was 100 years old, so you can blame him. I can't blame him for not carrying the wood. He was carrying the fire, and they get up to the mountain. So this is the way it reads in the Bible. God said, take your son, your only son whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on a mountain I will show you. Early the next morning, Abraham got up and loaded his donkey. So I want you to notice, early next morning. God says, do it. And the next day, he gets up and loads his donkey up. I mean, I think I might have taken some time to think about it. But for whatever reason, he knew. I mean, he just knew. And I've had times like that in my life. I hope you have too, where you really knew it was God speaking. And not only did he know that it was God speaking, but he knew that he needed to obey right away. Well, they got to the mountain. He had some servants with him to help carry stuff till they got to the mountain. Then, he made Isaac carry the wood up to the top. This mountain, by the way, Moriah, it's in the region of Moriah. It doesn't say which exact mountain, but as far as, the Jews believe, and as far as most scholars can tell, this is the same mountain that later on the temple is built on. So Mount Moriah, also called the Temple Mount, also called, it's in Jerusalem. It's a high point. And it's got this unique kind of geography to it because it's this big rock that's way up high and looks out over all around. I haven't been there. If Dave was here, he could describe it better. But so the same spot, kind of interesting, that they would build the temples on later. And I'll talk more about that in a little while. As Isaac and Abraham got up there, he said, as the two of them went on together, Isaac spoke up and said to his father, Abraham, Father, yes, my son. Abraham replied, the fire and the wood are here, Isaac said. But where's the lamb for the burnt offering? Because his dad hasn't told him yet. It's you, dude. Abraham answered, God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, son. Now, I don't know exactly what he was thinking when he said that, but we know later in the book of Hebrews that the author of Hebrews, it's in the New Testament, tells us that by faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had embraced the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. And then in Hebrews, the author says, and a lot of people think it was Paul, but Abraham reasoned that God could even raise the dead, so in a manner of speaking, he did receive Isaac back from death. So according to this, his reasoning was, well, I am going to kill him, and I am going to sacrifice him, but God will raise him from the dead, and everything's going to be cool. That's a lot of faith. That's a lot of faith. I haven't had personal experience, I don't think, with that degree of faith. But I can tell you, when my oldest daughter, Julia, who just went down with the teenagers, and her husband, Vigo, they studied linguistics with the idea of being Bible translators in Tanzania. And they went, and when they went there, after several years of preparation after their school, and they lived there for, it was between 3 and 4 years with a little break in there to have Rebecca. When they lived there, that was a really hard time for me. And it was especially hard because, you know, it has such a reputation as a place where you can get hurt. You can get hurt here, you know. But just Tanzania, and out in the boonies where they were, it had such a reputation as a place where you could get hurt. And on top of that, I knew that, Vigo found out that scorpions fluoresce at night if you shine a UV light on them. So he got this big UV flashlight, and he shined it across their backyard, and he had the guard helping him, I think. And they killed more than 70 scorpions in one night. And I visited them a couple times there. This is the backyard. It's just about the size of a big suburban backyard here. And the grass was cut by a guy with a machete like this. So the grass was always a little bit tall, you know. And the kids would be running around out there playing. When I was there, they got Superman and, Batman and Robin capes. And they were running around. And the whole time, all I could think is, man, this whole yard is filled with scorpions, you know. And they killed a cobra inside the house. They killed a cobra out in the yard. They killed a cobra in their office, which was a little building separate there. That's the ones they saw. One night, Julia called us. So thank God we had phone. In some ways, thank God we had phone contact. In other ways, it made it harder. She called us one night and she says, "Pray for me. Something just bit me. It was under the bed. I didn't see it. I don't know if it was a snake or a scorpion or what, you know." And it was hurting really bad. And it was a couple hour drive at least to the nearest competent medical help. And plus, as I recall, they were a little bit low on diesel and so they weren't really sure they could make it if they did have to do it without going an hour in the other direction to get some more diesel and then coming back. So if you've been bit by a cobra, like, minutes matter. The hours really matter, right? Well, it turned out it wasn't a cobra, apparently, and as far as they could tell, was it a spider or a scorpion? It was a scorpion. They found a scorpion. They get all sleepy after they sting you, and they found a sleepy scorpion over in part of their house, and they figure that must be the one that stung her. And so it hurt a real lot, but it's not the kind that kills you. Anyway, can you imagine? Well, no, you can't, but I felt pretty bad after I hung up, and I'm praying and wondering, did she get by it? Bit by a cobra? Did she get stung by a scorpion? If she got stung by a scorpion, how sick is she going to get? And, you know, so some hours later we found out that although it hurt really bad, she was going to be okay. So, you know, sometimes, now that's just my story. Each one of you has a story of some kind. I'm just looking at Gary and thinking of when he wasn't there, but his most of his family was in this van wreck. It was horrendous van wreck. And some of them were nobody was injured to the point where they weren't going to live, but they were definitely badly injured, and he had nothing he could do about it. You were off in Seattle, weren't you? Something like that. Yeah, and it happened down near Albany or something. So, right. That's what, yeah, Albany, but you were in Seattle, I think. Yes, yeah. Being under a van's not good, you know. I mean, not under the van flipped over and she was laying with a van on top of her on her head. So I do not mean to minimize how bad of an accident. It was very bad. It's just that it ended okay, kind of like my scorpion. Sometimes your stories don't end that well. I know people here who have lost children. I know people who have lost other loved ones, brothers or sisters. Or a lot of us are old enough to have lost parents and so on. Everything we have, every single thing that we have, all the relationships, all the material goods, everything we know, all that, it's all a gift from God. It's all His. And for whatever reason, He may decide to take some of it back at any given time. And we have to live with that knowledge. So Abraham was willing to live with that knowledge to the point where he actually took Isaac's, tied him up, laid him on the wood, got the knife up, and then all of a sudden an angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, "Abraham, Abraham." "Here I am," he replied. "Do not lay a hand on the boy," the angel said. "Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son." Abraham looked up, and there in the thicket, he saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So even though he reasoned that his son could be raised from the dead, he told his son, well, God will provide a lamb or a ram, and God did. Everything I know about God says he would never ask, he wouldn't actually have someone kill their child. But everything I know about God says that sometimes people's children die. Sometimes, you know, Julia could have died that night with the if it had been a cobra bite instead of a scorpion sting. I always like to, don't like to say it, but it's true, the mortality rate for everyone in this room is 100%. You know, every one of, unless Jesus comes back before, we're all going to die. And my famous saying with my kids was, life is hard and then you die. But I always, the joke was, I always knew, then you go to heaven, see? So I was wondering if they would figure that out. They apparently figured it out. That's good. So that's, you know, Gary's talking about setting the bar. That's setting the bar pretty high, right? Wow. sacrificial giving is being willing to lay my only child out on the altar and watch them die. And I think a lot of times when we talk about giving in the church, a lot of us walk, not all of us, but some of us walk around with this feeling like, oh man, I can't give enough. I can't give that much. Or, you know, there's no way I could possibly do that. Or lots of those kind of thoughts, because it's like an all or nothing kind of thinking. And I think that's always a mistake to get too much into the all or nothing thinking, because that's kind of putting God in a box and saying he always works the same way. You always push the same buttons and pull the same levers. So if you're going to do a sacrifice, you got to do it exactly the same way every time. I'm going to prove to you from the scriptures that that's the case, that that's not how it works. So the next story is about David, King David. So he's the second king of the Hebrews, of the Jews. And by the way, so the story about Abraham happened 4,000 years ago. Where else do you go where people are talking to you about stuff that happened 4,000 years ago on a regular basis, right? And then the story about this story is 3,000 years ago. So it's 1,000 years after Abraham. Now we got King David. And I probably shouldn't go through in all detail what happened in the intervening 1,000 years, okay? But there he is. There's David. He's the king. And a really weird thing is, it says in the 2 Samuel chapter 24 that God incited him to take a census of all the Israelites. Now, the significance of this is that basically he was the king, God had helped them be victorious, and instead of just saying, thanks, God, he decided to go out and count how many soldiers he had. And it would be kind of like if we already won a war and then we went and counted how many planes and tanks we had and said, wow, we're really something, you know? It was a wrong way to go about it. Why God incited him to do that, I don't understand at all, frankly. In fact, in Chronicles, which retells this story, so Samuel and Kings were written before the Jews went off into captivity for 75 years. A couple hundred years later, the book of Chronicles was written in it. And so if you're reading through the Bible, you'll see there's all these repeats. And that just has to do with, it's the same stories told quite a bit later. And sometimes the emphasis is a little different. And in Chronicles, it said Satan incited David to do this. And you think, well, wait a minute, I thought the other one said God incited him to do it. Well, there's a story in Samuel about King Saul where it says God sends an evil spirit. And then there's Job where Satan's walking around in front of God saying, you know, the only reason Job worships you is because you don't hurt him. And God says, well, go ahead and hurt him, basically. Just don't kill him. So there's some pretty weird stuff in the Bible. You should read it. I mean, if you're up here expecting me to explain it all to you, it ain't going to work. Even the little bit that I know because I've read it a bunch of times and I've asked God to show me, and I know that I still get stuff wrong. I might even be telling you a bunch of wrong stuff this morning, right? So read it, ask God to explain it to you. If you think I'm just talking a load up here, then I urge you, that's why I wanted to give you the chapters, I urge you, read it and pray about it and think about it for yourself. As I understand it, for whatever reason, God asked stirred up David to where he had this idea, I'm going to go count all the troops. And then he realized he'd done a terrible thing. David said to the prophet, Gad, one of his main men, prophets, speak to God kind of guys, I am in deep distress. Let us fall into the hands of the Lord, for his mercy is great, but do not let me fall into human hands. In other words, God said there's going to have to be a punishment for doing that census. And he gave him three choices, and the one David chose was to just have God do stuff to him. The others were to have his enemies do stuff to him, and I forget what the other one was, but it doesn't matter. He chose to let God have his way. So the Lord sent a plague on Israel from that morning until the end of the time designated, and 70,000 of the people from Dan to Beersheba died. So those region of Israel, 70,000 of his subjects died of the plague as a result of a bad choice that he made that he was incited by God to make. You think the Bible's simple? It's not. If you think it's wrong because it's complicated, well, that's kind of silly, isn't it? Right? I mean, wouldn't a story about the creator of the universe and how he worked out our salvation starting 1,000 years ago, wouldn't you expect that to be a little bit complicated? So, you know, C.S. Lewis said, some people say to you, the Bible is like a story for children. It's too simple. And then you say, well, no, actually, you know, it's fairly complex, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes, oh, that's ridiculous. Nothing could be that complicated. He said, don't even talk to those people. Just waste your time. You know, I say talk to them if God tells you to, but recognize that it is complex. So the Lord sent a plague from Israel that morning until the end of time designated. 70,000 of the people from Dan to Beersheba died. When the angel stretched out his hand to destroy Jerusalem, the main city, the Lord relented concerning the disaster and said to the angel who was afflicting the people, enough, withdraw your hand. The angel of the Lord was then at the threshing floor of Araunah the Jebusite. So, short history lesson. The Jebusites were the people who lived in Jerusalem before the Jews took it over. And there were still some of them there. Long story why. There's still some of them there. So this guy wasn't even Jewish. He was one of these Jebusites. And he owned the very top of that hill. And I thought, well, let's see. Actually, pretty good place for a threshing floor. Because what is threshing? You take the wheat. You cut the heads off. There's various ways they did it. The way they did it in those days is they had these oxen, and they would pull this big, heavy thing about the size of a door or a couple of doors. There's a big, heavy wooden thing with all these little teeth underneath that were made out of either stones or metal, and it would cut the heads off the wheat as they dragged it around. So that's the sledge they talk about, the oxen and the sledge. So the oxen are walking around in a circle, and they're throwing the wheat stalks under there, and it's cutting the heads off. And then you winnow, which is to either use if you have an implement or your hands, and you throw the wheat up in the air, and the wind blows the straw part away, and the seeds are heavier, so they fall right back down. Well, what better place than a great big flattish kind of rock up high where all the wind's going to hit, right? It's usually windier up on top of the mountain. So this is a prime threshing floor. I don't know how prime it was compared to others, but it was a good one. And that's where the angel was standing, right in the middle of Jerusalem, after wiping out 70,000 people and about to do more before God stops him. So on that day, Gad went to David and said to him, so the same day that the killing just stopped, the prophet says to David, go up and build an altar to the Lord on the threshing floor of Araunah the Jebusite. So David went up as the Lord had commanded. So this was, even though it was the prophet speaking, this was a command from God through Gad, as the Lord commanded through Gad. So David goes up there, and he's going to do this burnt offering. But, I mean, you know, you don't want to build a great big fire and burn a bunch of little sheep and cattle and stuff in the middle of some guy's threshing floor. So he offers to buy it. But Araunah, before he even, he says, why are you here, basically, to David? Why are you here? And the king says, to buy your threshing floor, David answered, so I can build an altar to the Lord, that the plague on the people may be stopped. And even though Araunah wasn't a Jew, he could see this was like a big deal. The king came up, he's going to build an altar there and do some sacrifices. And he said, let the Lord, my king, take whatever he wishes and offer it up. Here are oxen for the burnt offering. Here are the threshing sledges and the yokes, big wooden things, to use for wood for burning for the fire. Your Majesty, Aruna gives all this to the king. Aruna also said to him, may the Lord accept you. May the Lord your God accept you. So he was willing to give the whole thing over. But the king, David, replied to Aruna, no, I insist on paying you for it. I will not sacrifice to the Lord my God burnt offerings that cost me nothing. So David bought the threshing floor and the oxen and paid 50 shekels of silver for them. Shekel is like a half an ounce. Anybody that owns some silver knows the price has been bouncing all over the place, but even if you figure 20 bucks an ounce, it's like 10 bucks a shekel, 500 bucks, which, I don't know, maybe that was a pretty good going rate for a big piece of rock up high. Yeah. Sounds low to me, but you know, it's really hard to translate money from the old days to the new days. So you don't want to get too hung up on that. The idea was he wanted to pay him a fair price. He didn't want it to have to cost Aruna anything. He wanted Aruna to come out of it okay. His heart was, this is really going to be a sacrifice from me to God. Now, just to confuse you slightly more, I'll tell you that in 1 Chronicles, it said David paid Aruna, this is 1 Chronicles in chapter 21, verses 25 and 26, said David paid Aruna 600 shekels of gold for the site. Now, a lot of controversy about that, but the way I take it is the little payment was just for that threshing floor, and then at some point he realized, no, I want this whole area, and plus I need all the stuff to do the sacrifice with and all that jazz, so he paid him 500 shekels of gold, or, yeah, 600 shekels of gold. Now, if you figure that out in today's dollars, it's like $300,000, $500, $300,000. You're like, wow, that's a big difference. Was the Bible contradicting itself? I don't believe it does. I believe that usually when you think it contradicts itself, it's because you're reading something into it that it doesn't say. There's a bigger story back there that you don't get. I haven't always discovered what that backstory is, but it's amazing the number of times I thought there was a major contradiction, and then I found out, oh no, there's a pretty clear reason why it seems to contradict itself. But you know what? Here's the funny thing. It doesn't matter whether it was $500 or $300,000. That was peanuts to David. Peanuts! Because 500 or 600 shekels of gold is about, I think, 30 pounds of gold. And you think, well, 30 pounds of gold, that's not peanuts. Yeah, well, when David found out that his son Solomon was going to build the temple, and when God told him, you can't be the one to do it, you got to let your son do it, he thought, well, I'm going to get stuff ready for him. So I'm going to set aside a bunch of gold and silver and wood and iron and all this stuff, so he'll be all ready to build the temple when it's time. And it says that he set aside enough for the temple, plus out of his own personal wealth, he set aside 3,000 talents of gold. Now, as close as I can figure, that's $3 billion. $300,000 is 1/100th of a percent. It's 1/10,000th of $3 billion, right? It's teeny. It's like flip a quarter, you know? Less than that to him. Not to you or me. 300 pounds of gold for you or me, big deal. For him, peanuts. So what's the deal here? It doesn't always follow these formulas we want to put in there, right? David says, I want it to cost me. And if we would put that in for ourselves, I want it to cost me, we'd think, well, then it's going to have to at least be, name a number that's big to you, right? You wouldn't say, usually, it's got to cost me, therefore I'm going to pay a buck, you know? But I've had examples in my life. You go into a store and I've done this at Winco. You go into a store, you check out, you just bought $150 worth of groceries, and then you look down and you realize you haven't paid for your bottled water. And so it's like $250 or something like that. You think to yourself, you know, really, I'm not going to be comfortable until I go back in and pay for this thing of water. And the people are really glad when you do it. I mean, that's one of those employee-owned stores. But they're also a lot of places when you go back in, they're like, really? You came all the way back in here to give me $250 after you just spent $150, you know? So it's both. It's peanuts, but it's a big deal. And I was thinking about your life or a year. Let's see. I hope I put it on here. Yeah, there it is. A year is like 9,000 hours, if I did my math right. What's that? That's why I said about, but thank you. And then they accuse me of being an engineer and him of being. TR hangs around with engineers all the time, that's why. And so 1 hour is about, not exactly, but about 0.01% of a year. So out of a whole year, if you took 1 hour to do something, Bible, say hi to the neighbor next door. If you spent 60 times, you helped an old lady across the street like once a year, and it took a minute each time, that would be a sacrificial gift. Okay, that would be you saying, that's not what I had in mind right this minute, but I want to do it because I really feel like that's what God's telling me to do. Now, you can't help every little old lady across the street. You can't put a dollar, or at least $10, into every guy that's holding one of those signs, right? Maybe you can if you're rich enough, but if you went all over the country to everybody that's holding one of those signs saying anything helps and you put $10 in there, you'd run out of money pretty fast, right? You're going to have to decide when it's the right thing to do, and it may never be the right thing to do. And you're going to have to decide when it's not, when you don't need to do that. And you don't need to feel guilty about it. As long as you've asked God and tried as hard as you can to understand exactly what it is that God's asking you to do, you don't have to feel guilty about the fact that you don't want to serve in Sunday school. You want to play in the worship band, or you don't want to play in the worship band. You want to be a greeter, or you don't want to do any of that stuff because your life is such a wreck right now that it's all you can do to drag your own behind in here, okay? So, everybody's like, me. You should ask yourself, is that what God really saying, okay? I'm not going to let you totally off the hook, but I am going to let you off the hook. I mean, it's not my hook. It's God, okay? So when you're trying to think about what for me is sacrificial giving, don't think like, what is really, really, really going to hurt? Yeah? Because this could be anything. It could be sell your motorcycle, TR. Ooh! Take your Larrabee and smash it across your knee. Ooh! You know, I'm making him shiver right now. And that's the kind of thing we tend to think, you know. Give up your daughter. Let her be bitten by a cobra. Ooh! You know, hey, some terrible thing may happen. In fact, for those of you that are a little bit older, some terrible thing already has happened. Probably several of them, right? This thing that you thought was unassailable, perfect, you were going to get to have it forever, got blown up one way or the other. Somebody you really, really love and cared about got hurt or died or whatever, right? It's already happened. So you've already done some sacrificial giving, if you recognize it as such. You're okay. God loves you. You're in good shape, okay? Relax. It's okay. Don't be nervous like me. Just relax. And know that God loves you, and He is lovingly instructing you about what you can do next. And if it's killing your only son, figure on something like, well, I guess you can raise them from the dead, you know. But most of them are going to be a lot smaller than that. If it's give a buck to that guy standing on the corner, give a buck to the guy standing on the corner. If it's ignore all those and go work at the food bank for 1 hour this year, 0.01% of your time, go work at the food bank for 1 hour. You know, we're always trying to, I'll speak for myself. I'm always trying to do this calculation. Let's see. if I preach a sermon and if I do men's breakfast and if I talk to X number of people at McDonald's when I'm having breakfast in the morning, does that add up enough to like where I've used, and I read the Bible this much, oh, let's see, is there anything else? Oh, well, I took my grandkids to this thing yesterday with Vigo. That counts, doesn't it, God? You know, is that enough? Did I give enough? It's like, that's not how you do it, right? You just forget all that and say, anything else, God? And trust him that he's going to cover you, regardless of what that anything else is. We had Barbara's dad live with us for about a year and a half when he was in the final stages of dementia. And that's probably one of the hardest things I've done. It sounds simple enough, but it wasn't. It wasn't. It was really hard. And then that passed, and now we're on to other things, you know. Does that make me a great enough guy that now I can just rest on my laurels? No, that's not how it works. You know, you just, whatever's next is next. I think one reason we get this idea that we need to give everything comes from this story. It's in Luke chapter 21. So Jesus is with his disciples. They're at the temple. And by the way, I want to mention, each time here, each of these stories, we're in the same place, this mountain in the middle of Jerusalem. It gets called by different names, Aruna's Threshing Floor, Mount Moriah, the Temple Mount, and there's some people argue whether it's what they call Mount Zion. Doesn't matter. It's basically the same place, this flat spot way up on top of Jerusalem. And each time, God is present and speaking very clearly. Now, the first two times, the first time it was God speaking directly to Abraham. The second time, it was God speaking through the prophet, but making it clear that it was him speaking through the prophet, and use an angel too, to God, but it was God directly communicating. And the third time, it's Jesus Christ, God in human flesh, standing there talking to his disciples. And they're always on the same spot for all three stories, kind of them. And by the way, I said that Abraham was 4,000 years ago, David was 3,000 years ago, and this story about Jesus is 2,000 years ago. So every 1,000 years or so, God's going to, But he's there, and Barbara was going, well, what happened 1,000 years ago? And we couldn't find anything. Closest we came is that the Muslims built a huge Dome of the Rock. It's not a mosque, but it's a memorial kind of thing, right on that same spot, but it was like 1,300 years ago instead of 1,000 years ago. But if I round off, close enough, right? So weird stuff happens there every 1,000 years. God is there. He's with his disciples. As Jesus looked up, he saw the rich. He saw the rich putting their gifts into the temple treasury. He also saw a poor widow put in two very small copper coins. I tell you, he said, this poor widow has put in more than all the others. As far as they can figure, those coins were worth like an hour or two of labor, and laborers didn't get paid a lot in those days. So, but he says, truly I tell you, in other words, emphatically I tell you, this poor widow has put in more than all the others. All these people gave their gifts out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in all she had to live on. I don't know about you, but I usually read that as, oh, I get it, so the only way to impress God is to put in everything. But we've already seen that that's not the case. Abraham actually did not have to sacrifice his son. He had to be willing to. And David was supposed to buy the threshing floor, and he used a whopping 0.01% of his wealth to do it, right? And this widow, they could tell she was, in those days it was pretty obvious when you were poor. I mean, we might think it's obvious now, but it was like real obvious because clothes were like super expensive. So the right off the bat, the first thing you're going to notice is the clothes will be all raggedy and so on. And then just a lot of, you know, even easier now than it was, is even easier then than it is now to tell when somebody's poor. So they knew she was poor just from the way she looked. And they knew the gift was small because they saw the two little coins go in. And then they saw all these rich people dropping big bags of money. And some of them had trumpets blown to announce that they were giving this big gift and so on. But I think the way we read that is, so let's see, she was poor. It's everything she had to live on. So the formula for me is, I'm not, maybe I'm kind of poor, maybe I'm kind of well off, but either way, I have to put in everything. Well, yeah, you have to put in everything. God owns everything. Everything you have is God's. He may ask you to give any part of it, but it doesn't mean that every time you walk by a Salvation Army bucket that you reach in your pocket and put your whole net worth into the bucket, right? If you've ever given anything to anything, I don't think the church actually sells the distribution list for your names. I'm pretty sure they don't. I'm virtually positive. I'm looking at Janet just to make sure. Because she used to do the books. Now Chris does, but we don't, all right? But if you give it to anybody else, they probably do. And then all of a sudden you get all these letters in the mail, right? So, if you write a check and your name's on it and you give it to Salvation Army, and then all of a sudden the next day, all these missions and blah, 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 and you name it. You got to pick which ones you're going to give to, right? If any. You get to decide to just tear it up and throw it in the trash without looking at it. You don't need to feel guilty about it. Because you couldn't possibly give everything to all of them. I mean, that's stupid. Sorry. That would be unwise. But I don't want to sound like I'm running for office. So, couldn't resist. Ask God. Every time, ask God. I don't hear very clearly from Him. Me neither. Some of you do. Okay, great, good for you. I don't usually hear that clearly. Take a stab at it. Do you feel okay now? Maybe that wasn't enough. Maybe that was too much, right? Keep asking God. Keep praying. The whole point is to have this relationship and to recognize that everything you have is His. It's not about how much you put in the bucket. It's not about how much you have exactly. It's about the willingness and the obedience. And God said in 1 Samuel chapter 15, "Does the Lord delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as much as in obeying the Lord? To obey is better than sacrifice. And to heed is better than the fat of the rams." And you know what's really cool about that is I was being obedient to God when I watched how happy Rebecca was meeting Savannah here. I was participating in the joy. And that was right that minute, giving my attention to that was my gift to God and God's gift to me, okay? So sometimes it's just like really cool and sometimes it's awful. It's really hard. It's all of the above. I'm just going to end with a short rant, okay? Be careful of people that tell you that it always has to be good or it always has to be bad. Because that's not how it works, is it? The whole Bible's not that way. Life is not that way. Be careful of people that tell you that it always has to hurt or it always has to feel good. Be careful of people that tell you what God is telling you to do. Listen if they are good people. Listen if they're smart. And then ask God. Okay? Ask God. And if you don't hear from Him, ask Him again. And it says, if you don't, keep knocking. Keep hammering on that door until you feel like you've got a pretty good answer. I'm done. And there was something I was supposed to do. Oh, I know. So I'm going to volunteer Vigo to pray for anybody that needs it after the service. Because Barbara and I were supposed to do it, but she's looking through the door to see when we're coming down for the potluck. And the other thing I'm going to do is pray for the food so everybody doesn't like stand around like, "Is anybody going to pray before we eat the food?" You know. So I'm going to do that. And then please, you may have come You may have forgotten there's a potluck. You may have never been here before. What does it matter? If there's not enough food down there, I'll go across the street and buy some fried chicken or something. All right. There's plenty of food, so I won't have to do that. See? I didn't have to make that sacrifice. But I'll pray. Lord, thank you that we have these friends and brothers and sisters. Thank you that we have this beautiful, nice, warm, dry place to meet and the freedom to meet. And thank you that we have this bounty of food so that we can share with each other and not even worry about who takes how much. Thank you, Lord, for all your gifts and all your good things. Amen. I'm done. So, now you should go down and eat, unless you're one of those people who doesn't eat. So.